So in this Kaivalya Upanishad, the teacher first talks about the importance of meditation, the technique of meditation, and then the goal of meditation. And the goal can be understood as me, the consciousness within, not me, the ego, not me, the body, mind, and intellect, but me, the consciousness. We have two natures. We have the lower me, lower Arni, which we had talked about a few weeks back. And that is this body, mind, and intellect, this perceiver, feeler, and thinker, this ego that has this name of Anil or Kerry or Sanjay, male or female, young or old. And then there is the higher me, the self, the consciousness, which is the real me. And that we always forget. We are so focused on this worldly entity, I, that we forget that we have an absolute identity. This is called the empirical entity, the entity with which I deal with the world. It's like a counter, like a receptionist sits behind a counter and any patients come or any clients come, she deals with them. Okay, do you need medicine? Do you need this or whatever product? So the counter is what she uses to deal with the world. So similarly, this body is my counter that I use to deal with this world, to deal with, interact with my friends, my relatives, my customers, my clients. And we forget that. And we start thinking that this body is me, just as if that receptionist starts thinking this counter is me. And she'll never leave the counter. She'll say, this is me. You know, you'll think this person needs to go to a psychiatric hospital because she never wants to leave work because she's so identified with her work. But we are like that psychiatric patient. We get so identified with this counter thinking it is me, we forget that I am that consciousness, that that is my real nature. And this is my counter to deal with the world, this body to deal with the world of objects, the mind to deal with the world of emotions, and the intellect to deal with the world of concepts and ideas. So we have to always remember that. Never take this body, mind, and intellect as me. It is my instruments, my equipment. And when you do that, then you develop a healthy detachment. It's like my car. I take care of my car. But if my car gets crashed, I don't say, oh, I am dead. No, I go buy a new car. I mean, I'm, you know. Similarly, if this body gets old, I go get myself a new body. No big deal. Death is not nothing big then. It's just my old car I have to get rid of and pick up a new car. So I get a young, healthy body, you know, little baby. I start my life again. So what is to be afraid of death? Such a person becomes fearless. That's why one of God's names is Abhaya Pradam. Means one who grants us fearlessness. Once death, you are not afraid of death, then there's nothing you are afraid of. Sickness, old age, pain, nothing is me. It's happening to the body. Okay, I go to the pharmacy, I take some medicine. I don't get depressed. It's okay. So constantly I have to remember that I am that. And this is what this book will tell us. And so the teacher tells us that there is one entity that plays in the waking state as the waker and deals with the world. In the dream state, it's a dreamer and creates its own world. And in the deep sleep, it is in the state of ignorance. But that one I is constant. I am there in the waking, I am there in the dream, and I am there in the deep sleep. And what makes a person wake up? Last week we had studied, it is the vasanas. It is the desires that wake me up. Okay, I have to go to work, I have to earn some money, or I have to get up and eat. So whatever my desire is, I have to get up and tell that person, you know, last night, I didn't tell him off this morning. So whatever my desire is that wakes me up, and then I start functioning in the world. And that consciousness we had studied last week, Adharam Anandam Akhand Bodham, it is the consciousness which is of the nature of bliss. It is the substratum, the support from which this whole universe emerges and whole universe merges back into it. You can call this even God or consciousness, which is one. There is only one God, one consciousness that we can call Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, Shiva, Jesus, Buddha, Guru Nanak. And that is the same consciousness that we call as Om, that is enlivening me and enlivening all. And all of us are that consciousness. It's not only me, but you and you and you and the plant and the bird and the beggar and the homeless and the criminal and the murderer and the child molester. They are all that one consciousness. Everything is that one. So that understanding comes. So today's verse will tell us what comes out of this consciousness. How is the world created? Not so much as how is the world created, but what is or what is created. And then actual process of creation, I don't know if we'll have time to do it today. If not, we'll do it some other week. It's a very complicated subject. We may not be able to finish it today, because this itself will take at least a half hour or an hour. So it's very complicated. So I may not cover it today. Today we'll just talk about what comes out of this consciousness, what is emerges, what this whole universe consists of. So verse number 15, page 60. Etasmat jayate pranah. Etasmat jayate pranah. Mana sarvendriyani cha. Kham vayur jyotirapah. Jyotirapah. Prithvi vishvasya dharini. So it tasmat. Tasmat means from that. Why do we say that? Because at this moment we don't know who is God or where is God. So we say that God who is far, far away somewhere in heaven, or maybe he's in Kailash, you know, or in Vaikunth Loka, or maybe he's beyond the clouds, beyond space, somewhere that God far away. We don't say God is this. You know, this here. No, we always think of God as that. That God. We don't say this God, the God who is here, the God who is speaking through me, the God who is listening. No, we always relate God as far. So from that, and from then that, how will that become this? We'll do in the next verse. Next week, next week is the most powerful verse of this Upanishad, where what is that will be made very clear. So we'll do that next week. But today we'll talk about what is created from that. From that, etasmat jayate pranaha. Prana means the physiological functions. And we'll go into more detail about it. So the prana is the physiological functions. Mana is the mind. Mind also represents all the inner equipment, the subtle body. The mind, intellect, and all. We'll talk about that. And sarva indriyani cha. Indriya means all the organs. So there is gyan indriya and karma indriya. Gyan indriya are the sense organs, and karma indriyas are the organs of action. So all the indriyas, all the organs. Then kham. Kham is space. That's the five elements. Kham, then vayu is air, jyoti is fire, apa is water, and prithvi is earth. And we all know that. There are five elements. Space, air, fire, water, and earth. But the earth is given a separate category. It says prithvi, earth, vishvasya dharini. The support of this whole universe is the earth. And we know earth is from where we all get our sustenance. So let us see what are the things that are covered in that. First of all, talking about creation, you know, talking about creation reminds me of a little story. So these scientists, they decided one day, they all got together, four or five of the most brilliant scientists in the world, and they went to God and they said, God, look, you know, we don't need you anymore. You know, we have learned how to clone animals. We have learned how to clone humans. And we can create humans. We can make all these planes. And we can go to space. We can do miracles. We don't need you. Why don't you get lost? And we'll now, from now on, take over and run the creation. So you can retire and go take a nap. So God said, okay, no problem. You want to run the universe? Go ahead. But let us have a man-making contest. You create a man and I'll create a man and we'll see. Let's have a contest. The scientists say, no problem. So they pick up a piece of earth. God says, wait a minute, wait a minute. Go bring your own earth. Get your own earth before you can compete with this. I've created this. So, so everything that we create is comes out of earth. And so there are few categories that are mentioned. One is prana. Prana is the physiological functions. Because we have many layers in our personality. One is the body, which is called the food sheath, which is made out of food. And then there are the physiological functions called prana, which run the body, which is the physiology of the body, which you know all the scientists know. Then there is the mind, which is the manomaya kosha. The intellect, which is the knowledge sheath, and then the vasanas, which is the bliss sheath or the ignorance sheath. So we have five so-called layers around this consciousness. The body, the physiological functions, the mind, the intellect, and the vasanas. And they appear to cover the consciousness. And they say, oh, that's why I cannot see consciousness, because it is hidden deep within our heart. And even the Upanishad says that the Lord is hiding deep within our heart. And if you want to find him, don't go to temple, church, or mosque. Go within and you will find him. Of course, he's there in temple, church, and mosque too. And if you go there and if you see him, that's very good. But the closest is find him within. So there are five pranas that are the physiological functions. And our rishis thousands of years ago had described, they had already knew about physiology. So he says, they say there are five pranas. One is prana, which is the intake. So anything that I intake is called prana. I intake food, I intake water, I intake air, and the knowledge, you know, from the eyes, I see the sights, the sounds, the smell, the taste, the touch. So whatever I intake, anything I take in is called prana. So pranas are the intake. There are five pranas, but the first one is also called prana, the intake. The second is apana. Apana is excretion. So whatever I excrete from all different parts of my body, that excretion is called apana. Then when I intake the food has to circulate, obviously, because the food is digested by the digestive system and then circulated in the body. And from there, the blood takes the food to the liver and where it metabolizes. And, you know, we know all that. So there is a samana, which is the digestion, and vyana is the circulation. So they knew that there is a digestive system. There is a circulatory system which circulates the blood and carries the food, the digested food from the intestines to the liver and to the pancreas and wherever else the food is needed, to the brain and all. And so all these functions are carried out. And then the fifth one, which they called udana, which is a very interesting fifth aspect of prana. Udana is the forceful expulsion. So like sneezing. When I sneeze, that is udana, or tears that come out. That's not truly excretion, but it is udana. But the main role of udana comes at the time of death. When the body dies, the subtle body, the mind and intellect has to be released. Right? The mind and intellect doesn't die. Only the body is perishes. It is burnt or cremated or buried. So the mind and intellect, which is called the subtle body, is pushed out of the body. So that forceful expulsion of the subtle body is called udana. So that function is the last function that happens as a person is dying. As we know, the person is dying, he goes into coma where his mind intellect is no longer working, becomes unconscious, and it may be for a few seconds. You know, you suppose you have a sudden heart attack. The mind and intellect shuts down because it's not getting oxygen. And at that time, it needs to be pushed out forcefully. So that is called udana. So that is the five pranas. Then mana. Mana is the mind. When we say mana, mind, that includes all aspects of the antakarna, the inner equipment which runs the body. So what runs the body? The mind, the mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar, the mind, intellect, memory, and ego. So our subtle equipment has four aspects. The mind, which is the emotional aspect, the intellect, which is the thinking aspect, buddhi, chit is the memory, the storehouse of previous memories. Like first one time I got burnt in the fire as a child, I put my hand. After that, I never do it because I know that if I put my hand in the fire, I'm going to get burnt. That memory stays with me. And then the fourth is the ahankar or the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker that think I am this body. So these four aspects are the mana, are the subtle body. The subtle antakarana is called the inner equipment of the body. So the pranas are created from that, the mind, intellect, memory, ego, everything is created from that, Lord. And then the indriyas, sarva indriyani cha. There are five sense organs and five organs of action. The sense organs we all know, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. So with the eyes I see, with my nose I smell, with my ears I hear, with my skin I touch, with my tongue I taste. So the five sense organs, and there are five organs of action. So they are called Gyan Indriyas, the sense organs, and Karma Indriyas, the organs of action. And what are the organs of action? That with which I act, with which I work, the hands, feet, the speech, the excretory, and the procreative organs. So these are the five organs with which I function in the world, with my hands, feet, speech, excretion, and procreation. So these are the five karmindriyas or the organs of action. Then he says there are five elements. Five elements we all know: space, air, fire, water, and earth. Earth is the support of all. When we say earth, it includes all celestial bodies. When I say earth, it includes the moon, the sun, the stars, the Mercury, Venus, all the distant most planets. So earth means includes all the celestial bodies, whatever you see in the sky and whatever you don't even see, which are billions and trillions of miles away, the stars. Everything is included in earth, and earth is the support of all, and we know that because all plants grow from where? From earth. If there was no plants, we wouldn't be able to eat. And other people say, we can survive, we are non-vegetarians, we can eat meat, we don't need plants. Yeah, but the meat that you eat needs plants, right? If you eat a cow, the cow needs plants. If you eat a pig or a chicken or a fish, they all need plants to nourish themselves. So directly or indirectly, you're eating plants which grow from the earth. Not only that, but the earth is also the support source of all the minerals, and iron and copper and manganese. So all the bricks, all the stones, the quarries that you make, all the buildings, and you make your houses, and you make factories, and you know, all the chemicals that we use to make iron and steel and copper and manganese and zinc and straw, everything. The space shuttle is made of all these titanium and everything. Where does it come from? Comes from the earth. That's why in our scriptures we worship earth as Mother Earth. So earth is very much respected because it is like our mother. Just as when we are born, the mother gives us everything that we need and takes care of us throughout our life. Like today I texted my son, he's 36 years old, and I said, happy birthday. So he couldn't talk to me, but he replied. He said, thank you, Dad, for taking care of me for 36 years. So in the sense, what it means is that we take care of the children even after they are grown up. So similarly, the earth is considered as the mother, just as the mother takes care of the children throughout life. So similarly, the earth takes care of every one of us. And the whole, everything that we see is supported, sustained, nourished by the earth. And we have to, you know, support the earth. The earth should not be abused. But what we find is that we are just, you know, extracting, you know, over-consuming, And sooner or later, the oil is going to finish. You know, the how much oil we have, then the, you know, we are polluting the earth, we are polluting our waters. So the fish are going to be polluted, the plants are going to be polluted. The air, you know, the air is which also supports us, and we are polluting that, you know, by creating global warming. We are changing the atmosphere, but the earth is so polluted. In some of the cities you go, you can't even breathe. In Peking and all, and in Delhi, and in the Mexico City, it's so bad you can't even see the sun. It's all haze. What we see here is nothing. You know, that is so much more worse. And they are actually restricting cars. Like only odd number cars can come on one odd days, and even number cars on even days, trying to restrict the amount of pollution because there's so much respiratory disease. So what this is telling us, that there is one consciousness from which this whole universe has emerged. All the, you know, body, all its functions, the mind, the intellect, the, you know, the objects of the world, the emotions, the, everything has come. So one has to constantly remember, just as from one gold comes all these beautiful ornaments, necklace, bracelet, anklet. From one mud comes all different parts, yellow part, green part, you know, a saucer, plate, mug. So parts are nothing but that one mud, ornaments are nothing but that gold. So similarly, we are all, where did we come from? We came from that consciousness. So we are all nothing but that one consciousness. This reminds me of a story. There was this man who was having a hard time. He was having problem, you know, financial problems. So in his house, he had a lot of gold, three gold, you know, pieces. One was a flower made out of real gold, and one was a man, you know, figure of a man, and one was a figure of God made out of gold, Ram or, you know, Jesus or whatever you want to call it. So he had three gold pieces in his house, and he was having financial problems. So he went to the jeweler and he sold that flower, you know, that had was made out of gold. He said, how much for that? He said, gold is $700 an ounce. So, okay, so it is 10 ounces, so you get $7,000 or whatever it was. So he then, after a while, again, he needed more money. So he went, that man figure, you know, how much is that? He said, gold is $900 an ounce. So this is 10 ounces, so you get $9,000. He said, that's good. Man is worth more than a flower. That's very good. So he got $9,000. And again, he had financial problems. So then he took that picture of Jesus, that statue of Jesus or Krishna or Ram. He said, how much for this? He said, gold is, you know, $500 an ounce. I'll only give you $5,000. It's 10 ounces. He says, what? You gave me $7,000 for the flower, $9,000 for the man, and for God, you're only giving me 5,000? That's not right. God should be worth more. The jeweler says, look, I don't care whether it's flower, man, or God. I'm looking at the gold. Whatever the amount of gold is and whatever the price is, I'll give it. You may call it God or man or flower. As far as I'm concerned, I'm going to melt it into gold and then make new ornaments. So whether you bring me a picture of God or man or a flower, to me, they are all gold and gold alone. So the jeweler looks at the gold. He doesn't look at the name and form. You may give a name as flower or a name and form as man or name and form as Ram or Jesus. But in reality, it is all gold. So similarly, all of us, we get so caught up on the name and form. You know, this is my friend. This is my enemy. This is belongs to my church, my religion. But we forget the essential nature, and that's like the jeweler sees the essential nature, doesn't see the name and form. So you and I should see the name and form. Obviously, you can't, you know, not deal with the name and form. Obviously, when you meet a person you know or a person you don't know, I mean, you know, it would be, it's not that you will dislike or like, but you deal with, like a chair, you don't, you know, sit on the chair and you put books on the table, but you can't do the other way around, sit on the table and put books on the chair. You say everything is wood. No, they have it. The chair has its own function, the table has its own function, the cup has its own function, the saucer has its own function. So you see the differences, but you don't forget that all cups and saucers are mud, all tables and chairs are wood. So all humans are that one consciousness, all plants, birds, they are all me. So that understanding comes when you realize that one consciousness appearing in all, and that is the essence of this verse, that from that one consciousness comes all the physiological functions, the subtle body, the mind, intellect, the sense organs, organs of action, the elements, space, air, fire, water, and earth, and all celestial bodies. So whatever you see, what they have done is included anything. There is nothing that has been excluded in this list. Anything that you see in the universe is that one consciousness alone. So this is the easy verse. It doesn't have too much difficulty. But I thought I'll just go into a little more detail about what it each one constitutes, why they have said mana, prana, indriya, and all that. And then next week is the most, one of the most difficult verses, but also the most powerful verse, which has the essence of this Upanishad. So that we will do next week, which will tell us who is God, who am I, and what is my relationship. Very well shown in the next verse. So please read the next verse before you come, because it is a very powerful verse. So then your understanding will be better. So please read it, because that's a little difficult verse to understand and explain. So that is verse number 16. Tat yat param brahma sarvatma. So today we'll end here. Any questions, any comments about this? Yes.
And it is like anatomy and physiology class. It just reminds me of that.
Right.
And it is in that much detail and so precise.
Right.
I'm just amazed.
Right. In fact, there is one Upanishad, Prashna Upanishad, where actually they have given the layers of the body. They have talked about the skin, the subcutaneous layer, the muscle, blood vessels, the marrow. Everything has been described in detail. So thousands of years ago, they knew anatomy and physiology, and exactly, yeah, that's right. It is like we are sitting in a medical class. And that particular Upanishad has details of the human body, of either function of each part, what does it do. When you dissect the body, what are the different layers, everything, very much detailed. They knew about the bone marrow and all that, everything they knew.
What's the name again?
Prashna Upanishad.
Word research basically means it's just somebody had it and now we're just researching it again.
Exactly. Right, that's research, right. Searching again. And this is without any microscopes, without any telescopes. In fact, they knew the movements of the, without telescopes, they knew the movements of the stars. They had described the movements of the moon and all the planets and when they will appear. And they knew all that the Venus will appear at this time and the moon will appear. And they knew all that even without any telescopes, just by meditation, by going within. They knew, they discovered everything. Zero was discovered then, and all the decimals and fractions and the advanced mathematics and calculus, all that was described thousands of years ago in our scriptures. A very advanced mathematics, everything just through meditation. And they knew the movements of all the stars, all the planets. They describe precisely how they move and what happens. All astronomy, astrology, everything was known.
Not working, but mind and intellect are working. So when you're under anesthesia, what works?
Then that's a deep sleep. Anesthesia is like deep sleep.
But deep sleep, your mind does not work.
No, mind does not work, but the physiological functions go on. That's why the person is still breathing and, able to heart and lungs. That's what happens in deep sleep. You are not talking, you are not listening, your mind is not.
In deep sleep, you cannot be connected or you cannot see the ultimate
no.
consciousness.
In deep sleep is your recuperation time. We need deep sleep to recharge this body, because all day it is utilized, the mind is stressed and, working. And if you can't sleep, people who can't sleep go mad. That's one of the way they torture. Really? You had trouble sleeping? Oh.
She was the same severe insomnia.
Oh, really? Maybe I'll talk to you afterwards, a few techniques, what I do, but, you know. But really, deep sleep is when your body gets charged, and when your mind, which has been racing, gets rest, and your body gets rest, and deep sleep is very necessary.
Not same as meditation.
No, deep sleep is not. In meditation, you are awake, and your mind is still, but you are awake. In deep meditation, if you ever go into that, your mind becomes completely almost still, but you are awake. You're not asleep. So some people fall asleep when their mind becomes very still in meditation, which is something, you know, can happen, but we recommend you avoid that. But meditation is different from deep sleep. Deep sleep is rest. It is a state of ignorance where I don't know who I am, where I am. That's why a deep sleep, a beggar sleeping on the street or a king sleeping in a golden bed, they both have the same experience of deep sleep. In fact, the one sleeping on the street may actually have more sound sleep than the one sleeping in the golden bed, because he may be taking sleeping pills to sleep.
They could actually leave their body on their own wish at their own time. Like they go in deep samadhi and then they get in the body that they actually
understand. You mean they, when at the time of death or even while normal?
A
lot of people do that. It's very common. It's very common. At all advanced meditators and seekers can do that. Once you have advanced, what you do is your subtle body can actually leave the gross body and go into higher worlds. That's very common. A lot of people do that. Yeah, that's not anything great. I mean,
leave for good?
No. You go for a while, you can go into the higher worlds. Yeah, no, that he chose to die, but there are a lot of advanced seekers who can travel into higher worlds and come back, and nothing happens to the body. They may be gone for a few minutes. That's a very common, not very common, means not everybody can do it, but all advanced seekers can do that. That's not a big deal. To have an out-of-body experience, a lot of people do that. They can do that. And, lot means there may be a few hundred. You know, I'm not saying that there's like thousands or hundred, but I'm sure there are a few hundred people on this earth right now who could easily do that. They could go into that samadhi state in meditation. And then that subtle body, the mind and intellect, can wander. They actually can have other experiences, go to different worlds, see different worlds. Because there are multiple worlds. We know that. There are 7 above and 6 below. There are 14 worlds. And then among the worlds, there are sub-worlds, just as in this there are so many planets and stars. So there are so much more worlds than this. And so they can go into different worlds and interact with different beings. There are celestial beings there. You can call them angels. Even, you know, so there's everything is there. And so these people go into these worlds. They meet with gods. They will see like Krishna or Shiva. They will meet, or they will meet Ganpati, or they will meet these different celestial beings, and then come back. Yes. But that doesn't mean they are realized, but that means they are very advanced. When you are truly realized, then you become one with that. Then that is the final. Then that I completely disappears. But these are steps in your spiritual journey. Yeah, that's not a very difficult siddhi to do. I know 2 or 3 people who do that regularly. I myself haven't done. I may have had once or twice, you know, some experiences very, you know, in meditation a lot. But I cannot do that. I do not have that siddhi. But I know a couple of people who routinely do that. I know for a fact they are not lying. You know, you can tell whether a person is telling the truth or not. And they routinely go to the higher worlds and deal with different celestial beings and come back. Yeah, that's where that happens.
So can they connect and they know them, and can they
I don't know if they have that much ability. They can just go out of that body. Then what happens, they don't control it. They may or they may not. No, they cannot go to a specific individual and go and talk to him. No, not like that. But they have the ability to get out of their body and wander into these higher worlds. And it's not a intention. See, the moment you say, I intend to do it, then you will never go. Then you will be stuck in the body, in the ego. When your ego dies, when the ego becomes still, the mind becomes still, then in that state, the subtle body can get out. Then they don't have an intention of doing it. It just happens. I don't think you cannot say, oh, we go and talk to my father and find out how he's doing.
No.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is bluff. I think some of that is bluff. They're trying to basically get your money, you know. So they will say that. In fact, there was one guy, I won't name him, but this guy told another friend of his that, you know, he knew how to do some rituals, some, you know, pujas and also. He said, you know, in this puja, I saw your father and mother. They had just died and I talked to them and they are okay and they send you their good wishes. Now, I know that guy is not that advanced, so I'm sure he was just doing it to impress. So there are all different kinds of people. I'm quite sure, knowing him, that he wouldn't have. But, and then you don't go around and tell people that, you know, that I saw your father and mother and they are all healthy and they are happy in heaven and they are sending you good. Maybe he did, I don't know. Again, who am I to call him a liar? I was not there. But you know how true a person is or not. Right. But still our karmas and with the vasanas, we are still connected. Like if you have hurt somebody a lot in this life, if you have been very hurtful, say you abused a child or molested somebody or you hurt your spouse or did something very bad, then those karmas will carry and the next birth. You may not know that this was my spouse, but you will have to pay the debt of those. Or you have stolen money from somebody. Next life, you'll have to give it back to him. You may not know it's the same person, obviously, you know, they're different, but the connections remain. The karmic law is very complicated, it's very precise. So it's not that it will be the same name or the same person, but you will somehow or the other have to pay for your karmas. Nothing escapes. Even if you die, you don't escape.
So you will not have memory, but you will still
carry all that. Right, yeah. You will not remember. There are rare individuals who remember. There was this story, I don't know if I told you that, but in this newspaper was published in India that there was this young girl, she was about 8 or 9 years old, and she was always crying, I want to go back to my home, I want to go back to my home. They said, no, this is your home. No, my home is in a different city, in a different state, and my home is there, and that is my real home, that is my family there. So they said, really? He said, yeah. So they actually took her. And so she went and she said, yeah, this city, she named the city, I forget now, Allahabad or what. And she said, and this street, and this is my house. So she actually took them to the street, took them to their house and said, this was my house. I was living here. And then she even named herself what her name was before she died. She said, that is me. I am that Chandravati or whatever. And then there were these two grown men. And she said, these are my children. And she started crying. Because she was their mother and she had died. And she said, these are my boys, these are my son. And she actually started crying. She started, but that's a very rare incident. But that came in the paper and it was actually confirmed and documented. So she remembered her previous birth and remembered her children. She actually pointed out the house and she told things inside the house. This room is here and she had never been there. This room is there and this is the name of my son. And she even named them. The children, you know, she had never met them. She named them correctly. And she totally identified the house and told all the incidents that had happened before she died. But those are very rare individuals who remember. Or people like Mozart, you know, at age 5, he was composing, you know, operas. Now, how could he have learned how to? His parents just gave him a piano and he started composing. How could he have done that? It had to be previous birth. Like Bobby Fischer at 9 years, he was a chess grandmaster. They gave him a chess board and he learned how to play and he could defeat the best players in the world. He was actually number one for a while, the world champion, even at age maybe 20 or something. He was champion. How could he do that at age 9? So that all is from previous birth. And then same thing, you know, some people are gifted in art. You know, you have two children. One is a very good musician. One is a very good, you know, scientist. One is a sportsman. And fourth one is a duffer. He doesn't do anything. How did that happen? You know, it is all from, you know, from previous birth, art or music. But these child prodigies are definitely a proof of reincarnation. And the other thing that there is proof of reincarnation, people always ask, what proof is there? The proof is God. Because if God is all merciful, kind, loving, compassionate, you know, just and all, why is one person being born as a beggar, another one a multimillionaire, you know, child? One child is brilliant scientist, another one is mentally challenged, Down syndrome. One is healthy, one has no limbs. So it's not that he's playing favorites and flipping a coin and saying, okay, this guy goes to, you know, Rockefeller's house and this guy goes to a hut in Africa. No, it's all their own karmas that do that. So he doesn't decide anything. We decide based on the kind of body I get, the kind of parents I get, the kind of life I get, the kind of country I'm born in. Everything is decided by my karmas and by my vasanas. So there is nothing that is by chance, and there is nobody playing favorites. If you're having good or bad action results, it is because of your own good and bad actions. Nobody is, it's not your husband, not your wife, not your boss, not your child, not your brother, sister, nobody. It is you, yourself, and you. That's it. Or I, myself, and I. No, that's true. It's very true. 100%. There is absolutely no doubt. Nothing happens without a reason. Or another reason why something may be happening is you need to learn a lesson. See, Swami Chinmayananda says that we are all patients. And we are in this divine hospital. And why are we born? Because we have imperfections. We have vasanas. And so we are all imperfect. We all have some deficiency or defect. That's why. Otherwise we would be angels. We would be with God. Right? We would be gods. The fact that we are human means we are not perfect yet. So, just as when you are in a hospital and there are three patients, in the successive rooms. Now one has a broken leg. One has a pneumonia, and one has just a stomach upset, gastroenteritis. Now the gastroenteritis guy, within one day his stomach gets well, he gets sent home. The guy with the pneumonia, he has to get injections, he has a bad, 1 week he's with antibiotics, he has to have painful injections and after 1 week. And the guy with the broken leg, he has to stay 3 months, with his leg in a cast and all kind of painful surgeries. Now they'll say doctor is, favoritism. He's favoring the guy with the gastroenteritis and the guy with the pneumonia. No, he's not. The guy with the gastroenteritis needs 1 day of stay. So that's all he gives him. Another one needs a week. Another one needs 3 months. And similarly, say the guy with the gastroenteritis and the guy with the broken leg are in the same, next to each other in the same room. And the guy with the broken leg is getting chicken and food and all that big tray. And the guy with the gastroenteritis is getting jello and...
can't eat.
And he says, oh, this doctor is, playing favorite. He's only giving me jello and, little juice and all that. And then this guy is getting, no, doctor is not playing favorite. You cannot digest. So you need, lemonade or barley water or, and the other guy is healthy, but he has a broken leg. So just as each one of them gets different treatment so that they may all get well and leave the hospital. So each and every one of us needs certain treatments. And when we get sorrow, it is that Lord giving us the whatever treatment we need. If whatever you need to get well so that you don't come back. And so if you get suffering, think of it as, Lord, thank you for giving me this medicine so I may wake up, I may remember you. And interestingly, when the suffering comes, if you don't learn from that, then it will be repeated. If you don't change your behavior and you keep doing what you have been doing, then it's like when the teacher teaches a lesson and you don't learn it, then second day, third day, fourth day she repeats and you still don't learn, then you repeat the class. They don't graduate you to the fifth grade. You have to come, at least in India they do that. If you haven't studied, here they graduate everybody, even people who can't read go to high school, which I disagree with. But in India, if you don't pass the exam, they make you repeat the year. So similarly, when you get suffering, it is because you need to learn a lesson. And unless you learn a lesson, the suffering will be repeated. If you learn from that and change your behavior, then that problem will not come. So Swami Chinmayananda says, we are all in this hospital, divine hospital, and there is a divine doctor who gives us the right medicine that we need. So whenever problems come, either it's because of my karmas or because I need to learn, or both. So take every problem as a learning experience. Don't take it as a sorrow, but as the Lord is asking me to wake up. Same thing is past life karmas.
What lesson are you going to learn?
What lesson you have to learn is that you don't blame anybody else. You blame your own karmas. Of course, the person who is molesting, if he's caught, he should be punished and jailed and all that. I'm not saying that he should be escaped. But the child that is being molested, why is it happening? The child's past karmas. Maybe he molested somebody in a previous birth. He or she might have, you know. And a lot of times, actually, you will find, I know incidents, that there are two or three siblings who get molested by the same uncle and grandfather. This is a true incident. I know that. And one of them became very spiritually evolved because of their suffering. Another one had severe mental problems. Third one became a drug addict. And fourth one never forgave that person. So four siblings were molested by the same uncle. And all four of them got different outcomes. One was became spiritually evolved, became a great seeker. Another one became a drug addict. Another one became a mental patient. Actually developed emotional issues. And the fourth one has so much anger. Not only that, but then they have been molested as a child, they will turn around and molest other children. So a lot of times child molesters have been molested themselves as children. So again, that's what I'm saying. The same punishment that is happening, how the four children are reacting differently. This is also true. This I know that family personally. I know them very well. I'm not making it up. So these things happen. Unfortunately, it's sad, but because then it explains why. See, people always ask, why did that child have to be punished? What did she do? Or some child is born with leukemia. At age 6 months, they get leukemia, and then they have all these blood transfusions. And you know, it was that child's time had come to leave. You know, when a child leaves early, that is because see, each one of us comes with certain vasanas and certain karmas. And when that vasanas are exhausted for that particular birth and those karmas are exhausted, then that individual leaves. It could be at 6 months, it could be at 6 years, it could be at 16 years, could be at 60 years, could be at 100 years. When an individual's time to leave has come, because of his or her vasanas for that particular birth are exhausted, and his or her karmas for that particular birth are done, then the individual leaves. It's not God who decides, you know, okay, now it's time for you to get up and get out. No, that individual's time had come. Whatever that he or she had to do in this birth has finished. It could be even at 6 hours. Some children die at 6 hours or at 6 months. So again, it is all very, very complicated, but it is very precise. There's no favorites. There is no chance. In a plane accident, you know, 200 people are involved, two people survive. You know, how come they survived and 198 died? It was not time for them to go. Gahana karma no gati, it says in the Upanishad. The gati of the way of karma is very difficult to understand. What I am explaining is very simplistic, but it's very much more complicated than that. There are so many relationships, you know, so many contacts.
So you don't have any desires, and then that's why you decide that it's time for you to...
Yeah, for each birth, there are certain amount of karmas that we have to undergo. And it's not that all your desires are exhausted, but for that particular birth, only those particular desires had to be fulfilled. And those particular karmas had to be good or bad results you had to get.
Can you explain a couple of examples of the desires?
Exhausted doesn't mean that they are completely finished, but that for this particular life, say, I wanted to be a musician, right? So I became a musician, and I became very successful. Then my desire for music probably has been satisfied. You understand? Or in this particular life, there are certain karmas that had to fructify. See, different karmas fructify at different times. Like you plant three different seeds, like a wheat or a rice will come out in a year, right? A flower will take maybe 3 to 4 years, and a mango will take 10 years. Now, three seeds are planted at the same time, but they take different time to fructify. So similarly, the karmas I do will show results at different time. Like I put my hand in the fire. Fire is not going to say tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock you will get burnt. Right? You put my hand in the fire, instantly it gets burnt. But if I have said something bad to somebody, I may get the result of that next day. You know, my boss may yell at me without any reason. So that is a result of that. Or it may happen in the future. And if I have done something really bad, and I may not get all the results in this life itself, some of them get carried. And in each life, certain amount of karmas fructify, mature, give the result. So when those karmas for that particular birth are exhausted, the individual leaves.
Okay, could that be you also learn the lessons you needed to
Could be, yes, sure, also? Definitely. I see karmas you will create, but how do you reduce karmas? By doing unselfish deeds. See, if you need to live and eat and drink, those are not karmas, those are maintenance. You know, you
those
need to take care.
Gita,
yeah, like karma. So if you do bad deeds, nishiddha karma, that accumulates. Or if you do unselfish deeds where you help and serve the world, then that reduces your vasanas and reduces your karmic load. Your load of karmas are reduced by doing unselfish deeds, by sharing, helping, doing things without any expectation of any result, getting anything back. So those kind of activities are good. And those are, that's called karma yoga, where you don't even expect praise. You don't expect anything. You just do it unselfishly for the benefit of all. And that, those duties will reduce the karmas, and also remembering the Lord. Praying to God and remembering God, and worshipping, meditating, those are all ways to reduce the vastness, the selfishness. And that is, then it reflects in, those are called good karmas. So, you know, rather than worry too much about it, what I look at it is, where am I in my spiritual journey? Am I doing enough to help the world, number one? Number two, am I studying and learning enough so I'm getting closer to the truth? And B, am I developing more love and devotion for God? So these three things you have to do. With the body, you have to serve. With the mind, you have to love. And with the intellect, you have to know. And then you meditate. And when you do all those, it reduces your vastness. Yes?
I'm not sure I quite understood something. Udana?
Udana, yeah. That's the forceful expulsion.
You said it's the, when you die,
yeah,
the subtle body is forced out. Is that the vasanas in karma?
No, the subtle body, the mind and intellect, is expelled, and that goes into the heaven or hell and then looks for a new body. The subtle body or the shuttle body.
It's just part of your equipment.
Yeah, it's part of my equipment, but this equipment gets buried. This one takes another birth.
Equipment
of the consciousness. Nothing happens to consciousness.
But then why is it listed again, the mana buddhi? Why is that?
That's the subtle body.
Okay, so that's what...
That's what is expelled.
So mana and buddhi are expelled.
Expelled.
So they're part, they're actually up in the prana then.
No, they are not in the prana.
They're not that...
No, because there are five layers. One is the body, the annamaya kosha. Then there is the pranamaya kosha, the five physiological functions. And the udana, the mind and buddhi are not part of the physiology. The mind is the manomaya kosha and the intellect is the vijnanamaya kosha. So there are five layers.
So the
mana buddhi is not part of udana. Udana expels man and buddhi. It's like I push the chair. Is the chair part of me? Like I'm pushing the chair. The chair is not me. So the udana is pushing the mind and buddhi, man and buddhi.
So
udana is not.
Udana is a
forceful expulsion. That is the best description. Forceful expulsion.
Sure.
It is. It pushes the mind and intellect out of the body rapidly, and then it goes into higher worlds, and then stays in heaven and hell, and then looks for a new body. It could be happen in a day, it could be happen in 1,000 years. time there has no meaning.
And the vasanas and karma are also...
Vasanas and karma decide what happens to the individual. The vasanas and karma decide what happens to the man and buddhi when it takes a new body.
It's the like a vicious cycle, because it's like, I guess if you have a vasana for molesting children, and then you act on it...
Now that's where your intellect comes. You don't act on it. Because you are a human being. The person is not doing it openly. He's hiding and doing it. So he knows it is wrong. A child molester will not molest in the open. He'll take a child behind a wall and molest him. That means he knows it is wrong. So that's where the human intelligence is given to you, intellect, that it's wrong. And if he does not act on it, he will get rid of that vasana. He should understand that, okay, even if I was molested as a child, I should not impose that suffering on another child. How much I suffered as a child, why am I imposing it on another child? See, he should put himself in that child's shoes. How bad he felt when his uncle was molesting him. And is he going to do that to another child? Then that's a vicious cycle. But if he says, no, that was wrong, I shouldn't do it, then he's overcome that. Then he has overcome that vasana.
All bad habits.
Yeah, any bad habits, smoking, drinking, robbing, stealing, lying, all bad habits can be overcome because we create them. Nobody else creates these habits. We create them. That's where the intellect comes in. That's where the discrimination comes in, the ability to decide right and wrong. That's why humans are different from animals. A lion has to kill to eat, but a human, has the intellect to choose. Back erect but not stiff. Consciously relax the body from head to toe. Observe each part of the body and consciously, completely relax from head to toe and then back from toe to head. Now observe the breath, watch the air with full attention. I'm aware of nothing but the breath. If you wish, you can chant Om as the breath goes out. thoughts will arise in the mind, and your mind from here will go somewhere else, to work, to home, to family, to what I'm going to do after meditation. Bring the attention back here and now. Tell the mind, for this moment, let us just stay here and observe the breath. But if the mind is very agitated and will not listen, and you have a lot of anger or resentment, and the mind is racing, just be a witness and watch the racing of the mind. Stay in the here and now, and watch how the mind is working. A watched mind immediately becomes quiet. So become aware of the thoughts and bring them here by observing the breath and chanting Om. So who am I? Assert to yourself, I am that consciousness. This body, the breath, the mind are my equipments. But I am none of those. I am Shiva, I am Brahman, I am that consciousness, I am Om. Let us stay with that understanding for a few minutes and be a witness of the body, the breath, and the mind, uninvolved.